Hey everybody, John here. Before we start the episode, if you could just go and subscribe, rate, review, you know, give us a little love. It helps people find the podcast. We're trying to grow our audience. We would really appreciate it. Thanks. Guten Tag, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. I'm your main host, John Ruby, with my main co-host here.
I'm the main host, Corbin Coyle. Yeah,
I'm so rusty.
So rusty.
Guten Tag. I just got back from Europe, everybody. not humble bragging, but just saying.
Yeah,
so I guess
nice.
I'm still speaking like seven different languages in my head. But we're back. It's been a little bit. Excited to be here, Corbin. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, it's good to see you. It's been a good summer. I mean, you've been traveling all over the place. It's hot out. It's good.
Yeah, I got to go. I got to go to New York and Stockholm, Helsinki, and Vilnius. Yeah. And if you can write in and tell us what country Vilnius is in without looking it up, you get something. It's not easy. A lot of people don't know. I did not know until I went there. But it was actually a really cool city. It's in Lithuania, folks. I'll give away
that. Spoilers.
Spoiler alert. But excited to be here, excited for our guests, which is a little different than some of our other podcasts, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to get into when I was on the flight, it's kind of nice. I had time, to watch some stuff. So I watched the movie Air, which was good with Matt Damon and Ben yeah. Affleck. That was really cool. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Chris Tucker. And then I also watched an older movie, Children of Men, with Clive Owen, who's just like a cool dude. And that was an interesting movie. But then there was also some stand-up options. And Corbin, I'm curious who right now is like your soup du jour of stand-up options.
My favorite stand-up? I love John Mulaney. John Mulaney is like definitely one of my favorite. He like sings to my soul. Like I feel like I feel like people's favorite comedian is very reminiscent of who they are. And that he really is one of my favorites. Yeah, just like all his quotes, I quote him to this day after like throwing things and people don't know what to do when you start quoting comedian stuff at them. And it's like my favorite thing to like just throw at people. What about you? What's your favorite?
I mean, right now, I mean, anytime a Chappelle special comes out, I have to
Chappelle's
watch
great.
It. I just think he's just, you know, he's just so good. I love Bill Burr's stuff. That's like the stuff he can get away with.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's an old bit of his, but like the bit about like, actually, now that I was talking about airplanes, the bit about people having Wi-Fi on the plane and it going down and they're like pissed about it. And he's like, it has to go to space, folks. It's like, it goes to space and back and it's like down for a minute and people are like super annoyed, you know, like it's, yeah. expect it. Like, I mean, so he's great. I also like Nate Bergazzi. Do you know him at
no,
all?
I don't know that
okay.
one at all.
Yeah. He's real low key. He's kind of real dry and his stuff is really, really funny, but he'd be someone that's kind of fun to check out.
It's always fun to find like new comedians. I remember I went to the Edinburgh Fringe like years ago and I discovered Bo Burnham, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like it was just like, and I had no idea who he was. He has a joke that he uses all the time where he picks up his stool and he like shakes it around. And he's like, sorry, I have loose stool or something. Some really crass joke. But then he did it about haggis while he was out there in Scotland. Mm-hmm. So he was like, I had some haggis the other day. And I always thought that was like, I was like really clever. Like just like making it specific to the audience. And I had no idea who this guy was. And he's amazing too. I love his, he's kind of, I think, like a genius to a degree. Like his music talent is amazing. Yeah, he's awesome.
That's funny. Making it for the area where you're at just reminds me of like rock bands that joke about them like taping it on the back of the guitar of like, so good to be here. And then they look and they're like, Detroit. You know what I mean? Like they have a legacy, you know, and then they're like, Memphis. Like they have to look like it's written there. So they're like, That's a funny one. I'm trying to think because we listed all males. Ali Wong, I'm a big fan.
Oh, Ali Wong.
Her stuff. Yeah, her stuff. She really goes for it, which is fun.
I feel like you're gonna have on the back of our mic our guest's name just to make sure you get just right, just like the guitar. Same thing.
Same thing. I need my cheat sheets. It should probably be a post-it.
Yeah.
No, I'm excited. I'm super excited. I know our guest, you know pretty well. This is he's a jiu-jitsu coach. He's the founder of an apparel brand. Let's welcome Patrick Donabedian.
Nailed it.
Donabedian. That's pretty good. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
You nailed it. Thanks for having me. Hi, Corbin. Hi, John.
Hey, Pat.
I usually don't do words over two syllables. That's what I realized. So we got it in four there. It's nice. Patrick, good to have you. Any favorite stand-up comedians that jump to your brain?
Let's see how scared you'd ask me that. I'd say in general, just his riffs and his content, Theo Von comes to mind.
Oh my gosh.
For the ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I've been chomping on Theo. He's so good. Just lately he's been like everywhere, Patrick. I was so funny. There's the guy who interviews like athletes and rappers, and he interviewed Theo Von. He's part of what's it called? Anyways, Theo's so funny.
Interviews rappers and athletes. Are you like Charlemagne the God or something? Or?
No, yeah, I mean Charlemagne the God does, but this is this guy's with Barstool Sports. He's always kind of doing kind of ridiculous. Anyways, he had Theo Von on there, and Theo's just like got some really funny lines. Even though the other guy's kind of the funny one, Theo's just hilarious. Well, Patrick, you're a little different than a lot of our guests that we've had on here, and I'm curious. You know, we have a lot of actors and writers and you know, kind of creatives in our audience, but I think there's something really interesting about, you know, you being in the world of jujitsu and some other things. But I'm just curious, what first brought you to jujitsu? What kind of drew you to that world?
First thing that drew me to that world, well, I was a baseball player for most of my life, pretty much from like 5 years old on, and from very early on, like it turned into club ball at like 12 years old, playing year round. And so I ended up playing all the way till college, and so I became like I was always how deep do I want to get into the weeds here? Basically, I played in college baseball, so I got like kind of pretty big and buff, and you know, I had big muscles and I could squat 450 pounds, but I was always kind of terrified that like I wouldn't know what to do if a fight ever happened. And I usually just, you know, I was a late bloomer growing up. That's why I just bragged that I was so buff, I guess. Still getting over it. So I had always avoided fights, and I'd always just kind of like, you know, I wasn't, you know, people, I would say like I'm a lover, not a fighter or whatever, but there's bullies and there's kids that deserve an ass whooping sometimes. And I wasn't ever the one willing to give it because I just didn't know what I would do. And so that remained the same, even though I was, you know, this college jock, I still didn't know what to do. And so once baseball ended, there was a free jiu-jitsu club on campus at, I went to University of Miami, Florida. And I showed up because I had heard of it. You know, the UFC was getting popular, and my dad had mentioned it a few times when I was growing up, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like, you know, it's a thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, I tried it. I got absolutely like manhandled and destroyed by this little 140 pound Asian engineer, like half my size. I think he was like probably wearing glasses like while it happened too. And yeah, he just mercilessly like strangled me over and over. And obviously my ego was like a little bit bruised in that moment. And this is like a very common story, by the way, of most people who fall in love with jiu-jitsu. But, you know, I just thought to myself like, wow, imagine if he can do that to me, imagine what I can do to other people. Mm-hmm. What I could do with like my skills and my physicality. Yeah. So yeah, I went home for the summer and got obsessed with it, trained like three months, like twice a day. And yeah, came back, I got my revenge on the nerd. and then, yeah, a little plot twist there. And it's just kind of remained a hobby and, you know, spiraled into a whole career in business eventually.
Mm. So fast forwarding to that with like the career portion of it, just because a lot of people like want to be entrepreneurs and they want to have that creativity. Where did you find like the skills / like, I don't know, like how did you know you wanted to make that leap? Yeah, how did you know you wanted to just kind of become this entrepreneur and start your own business and apparel brand? And what was that journey like?
Okay. Well, yeah, since I just mentioned baseball, I mean, the first thing I'd say is try, you know, as a baseball player growing up, like I said, I played club ball till starting from like the age of like 11 or 12 on year round. And I always made the team by like being the hardest worker. I didn't always have the best physical assets or the most natural talent. But I, you know, became a catcher pretty early on because I like wasn't the fastest runner. I learned how to block balls really well. So I was like the only kid that like was willing to kind of like, you know,
throw yourself at
block it. A ball instead of, yeah, like use the tools of ignorance to and take bruises and seams off the wrists to, like, you know, make my way on the team. And I built up some pretty good skills, and I was like, you know, I was like on the tournament team or the All-Stars, or, you know, and in middle school I did pretty well. High school started to lose ground because I was like I said, like a late bloomer. I just hit puberty really late. And so just more and more is just like getting harder and harder to, you know, make the team, get playing time, play the position I wanted to play. And it felt like these other guys who were like, I don't know, going to parties and getting drunk and, you know, like barely working, like barely trying, were like, you know, hitting home runs and, mm-hmm. and getting to the playing time they wanted. So I just was like, it was obviously discouraging. But, you know, I just like kept working my ass off, eventually walked on at the University of Miami in Florida. And once again, as a catcher, I had the skills to like be a walk on. And I was mostly catching bullpens because, like, Yasmani Grandal, who became the, like, yeah. Dodgers catcher, and I think he's still a major leaguer. Wow. He was catcher there at the same time. And so, like, there was other, like, immensely talented players there. So I didn't get much playing time. So when baseball finally ended, I got cut from the team, which was, you know, devastating because I still had, like, a glimmer of, you know, hope that, oh, maybe I'll, like, break through finally. So what's interesting about jiu-jitsu is once I tried jiu-jitsu, like within less than 3 months, I realized like, oh, this, I love this like way more than baseball. Mm-hmm. And I'd played baseball for 15 years. You don't just like erase that, mm-hmm. that quickly. I was just like, wow, this is like, I felt myself passing up most of my peers. Mm-hmm. Like most of the people that were learning at the same time. I was just like, wow, this is like way easier. It just makes more sense to me. My body moves with it well. It's just intuitive. And so that was like the first time I was like, it felt really good because I didn't feel that way in the classroom with studying. You know, I didn't feel that way about a lot of things, but like this was like, whoa, I'm like, I found something that really clicks. And so that's like the very genesis of it. I can go deeper into like more the business side and how I actually, you know, turned it into something that was more than just a passion and a hobby. But yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to hear that, like how you kind of take that leap of faith and then make sure that you're, it's hard to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Like what you're finding the time every day and finding what do you do in order to encourage yourself to do, you know, certain deliverables on time.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So as far as being, so it sounds like you're asking a question about being accountable to yourself, being a self-starter.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Being your own boss.
Yeah. The best thing I can say about that specifically is you have to, you get over the glamour of being your own boss pretty quickly. And you realize it sucks to be a boss.
Yeah.
And you realize like, I would fire myself so quickly if I like, yeah. So you have to treat yourself like an employee. Like I literally, like, I think I made this mindset shift pretty like a year or so in, maybe 6 months in, where it's like, oh no, like you're an employee, mm-hmm. and you need to like treat yourself like one, and your bosses are actually all your clients. Mm-hmm. And so you actually have like, you think you, don't have a boss. Actually, you have like more bosses than you want, probably.
Yeah.
And that's both a little bit oppressive, but it's also a really good way to learn business and learn people skills and learn what actually adds value, what's perceived value and what's real value, which both are important. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, I guess initially, like we grew up, all of us, I'm a millennial, but we've all grown up in this kind of influencer culture where it's like, the point is to like become, a lot of us think like, oh, become well-known, become famous in your niche, and then people will just like hand you money. Yeah. And brands will just want you to like create dance for them and create content, and money will just like arrive to you. And that's probably worked out for some people, but what I realized about myself pretty early on is like, it doesn't turn me on to like get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. I'm not shy. Like I'll receive attention, but I'm a people person. I like interacting with people. And so, so I realized pretty early on that like, oh, actually if I can just like humble myself a little bit, even though I'm this like person that what that is very talented in this art of jiu-jitsu. If I treat my students like they're adults,
yeah,
which you think like that, which you think like is obvious, but in the martial arts culture, it's not. A lot of black belts and senseis talk down to their students, no matter if they're like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg billionaire training or yeah, or like your little cousin training. There's a lot of just like militant authoritarianism and you know, it could be more subtle or more overt, but I just saw that as like, oh, this is something that I can personally bring to the table and just like treat people like clients, not like students. That was a mindset shift also. Treating people like clients, not like students. Like, oh, I have to like, it's not a granted that you're just going to show up tomorrow because you enrolled like you paid a tuition. Like,
yeah,
I have to keep winning you. I have to keep encouraging you and keep you coming back. So yeah, I took on that responsibility early. I was going to say something else, but I'll pause there in case either you want to interject any questions.
Patrick, how do you kind of structure, like for yourself, your day when you're an entrepreneur, or if you're kind of, you know, teaching and things like that? How do you kind of, I think that's one of the things that like creatives can kind of sometimes struggle with, where we're like, okay, I need to be, you know, working on my craft. I want to stay in shape. I want to be on social media. I need to, you know, see friends. I need to, you know, pay my bills. It's like, how do you, you know, are you a early morning person? How do you kind of stay motivated on the days you're not motivated? How do you kind of set that up for yourself, or, you know, set your day up for success?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question, because you're right. There's too many things. Whether you're an entrepreneur or not, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of balls to juggle. And so I said this quote actually to a student this morning. One of my favorite quotes is Abraham Lincoln's, which I know, I'm sure you guys both have heard. If I was given 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first four sharpening the axe.
Yeah.
And that's how I think about my mornings. So, I am an early morning wake up person. That is the basis. That's kind of the basis of my brand, Day Slayer Apparel. It's about, you know, what wake up early, own the day, kind of that type of ethos. So I wasn't originally an early morning person. Like I did not want to get out of bed. And that's the worst feeling, I think. That's one of the worst feelings in the world, to not want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Or even when you're out of bed, living your life, doing the mundane, doing the challenging things, like wanting to go back into bed. I think that's a horrible feeling. And that's kind of informed my whole mission of what I'm trying to bring to the world, what I'm trying to help people with, is to want to get out of bed. So I originally started my business, to more probably directly answer Corbin's question, by starting an early morning program at 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, downtown LA. I didn't have any clients or students before that. I had just like been competing and teaching classes and seminars randomly at gyms. So I decided to kind of like put down some roots and like commit to something, commit to like building something. And so, yeah, cause we were in downtown LA, and 10th Planet is sort of a stoner culture. There's a lot of people that smoke weed. It's kind of like a lot of artists and people with irregular schedules. So everyone's like kind of up late. And I was like, I just wanted to become an early morning person. So I was like the only one that like wanted to wake up early and started at a 6:30 AM class. And so anyway, I started it. The main point was, if there were 20 people waiting outside of a gym at 6 AM, that would get me out of bed. So otherwise I just wasn't getting out of bed.
Yeah. Patrick, I just heard this thing that I just loved, which was Viktor Frankl had this. You're talking about like good quotes, and he said, mm-hmm. when man can't find meaning in his life, he distracts himself with pleasure. And with what you're saying, I think there's something really interesting about finding that like purpose, like you're saying, of having that purpose of teaching that like got you out of bed. And when people don't have that, I think. Knowing myself, I go towards pleasure. I know some people, like I was talking to my wife about that, and she kind of downward spirals. It's like, you know, but I think having that purpose, like you're talking about, of like being like, you know, having the reason to get out of bed, that drives you, I think that is a really great thing to keep in mind, because I think, yeah, that feeling of like just hitting the snooze button and not really having that be the best part of your day for some people, you know, is you know, what we're trying to kind of push against.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how rapidly any of us can find ourselves turning into hedonists when we don't have that purpose. Like when COVID first hit and we first there's no one's going to work. Like how quickly we hit the bottle and how quickly sleeping until 12 PM. It was crazy. Like doesn't take a lot. And so once that flywheel did start and like this was actually a viable thing with proof of concept, people were showing up. At first I was like waking up at, I wanted to sleep as much as I could because I was still like, you wake up early and that's great, but then you hit 11 a.m. or 2 p.m. and your eyes are, feel like 10-pound weights. That's not a good feeling. And so you try to like maximize your sleep. So like, okay, if I have to be there at 6:30, I'm gonna wake up at like 6:05. Then I can like quickly brush your teeth, wash your face, and like jump out the door. And then I start to be like, man, it kind of sucks to rush out the door. Maybe I'll wake up at like 6 or 5:55. And so that time kept going further and further back. So I kept discovering more and more things I enjoy. It's like, oh, I want to like have a delicious coffee waiting for me. I want to have a delicious like tea waiting for me, or like a nice breakfast sandwich that I like made the night before and just had to stick in the toaster oven real quick. And you start building these, this is like the beginning of a morning routine that everyone, talks about and asks about. It's like doing the things you want. And what you want is not just what's, like you said, like kind of just pleasures. It's the things that you're like, you feel like you're investing in your future and it feels good. And so things like meditating got added to my morning. Things like if there's a certain book that I'm really wanting to digest and like kind of, just carve out time for, it's like read that book, do some writing. And so having like a nice menu, a nice ecology of morning practices, is crucial to the creator, the person that sets their own schedule, because whether we like it or not, being an entrepreneur, you're going to be reactive. You have to be, especially in the beginning, you have to respond to clients quickly. You have to be, if you're auditioning, if you're an actor, like you have to be kind of checking your inbox for things, I'm sure. Like as much as we don't want to be reactive to inboxes and keeping our phones on do not disturb all the time, like you kind of do need to stay connected to the world. And so having that time in the morning first where you're not connected and you're really sharpening that blade, I think is crucial.
One of the things when I was in Europe is I looked for hotels that had like gyms or fitness centers. And a lot of times on vacation, people are like, that's my break maybe from like working out. But I actually loved it. I would work out in the morning before I would like tour a city and stuff like that. And I enjoyed that. Like that was part of my morning routine that I really liked. And I think that was an interesting like mindset shift. I haven't done that in other trips, but I really enjoyed it because like that's part of my morning now. And I think I was like, oh, I can bring this with me if I kind of make an effort to find places, where I can still get that sweat in that I like. And so it's kind of like you're saying, it's like finding those things that set your day up. And I also like this idea of like, it's before you start to become reactive to the day. You know what I mean? Like once later on in the day, it's like that you become reactive, you're like responding to emails or texts or things, versus in the morning, you can be a bit more, I don't know if proactive is the word, but you can be a little more deliberate, with what you're doing.
Patrick, yeah, intentional, yeah.
Intentional, yeah. What do you think, because we talked a little bit about entrepreneurship too, but what do you think, I'm kind of curious in this like teaching, what do you think makes a good like jiu-jitsu teacher?
Well, I think specific to jiu-jitsu, the number one impediment to learning, which is a teacher's purpose to help students learn, is fear and intimidation. Being in a survival state of mind. Survival state is, our rear brain, amygdala activated, having a fight, flight, or freeze reaction to stimulus. And so, as a teacher, my job is to like kind of disarm and deactivate that part of the brain and help my students enter an executive state. in their frontal lobe, where there's critical thinking, where there's problem solving, where there's some compassion, thinking about, you know, people other than yourself. This I learned from my master, Eddie Bravo. He inserts a lot of humor into his teaching. Like, his students, we were always cracking up while he was teaching. And he's like the most serious, technical, competitive assassin there is in, you know, in jiu-jitsu, in terms of like his old competitive career and how he trains his competitors now, his students. Mm-hmm. But you know, he also happens to be a stand-up comedian now and like an online personality. But I just realized pretty early on, like, wow, that was so rare, especially at the time. Now it's become a little bit more common that like teachers are like opening up their personalities, but it was always so just like top down militant, and students show up. Some thrive on that, but most students like fear getting hurt, fear embarrassing themselves and slowing down the class, fear, fear the realization of, turns out I am weak. I am like all these terrible things I thought I didn't want to be when I didn't go to jiu-jitsu. So inserting humor and mostly holding back information. That's the other big thing. When we're doing Shishan martial art, but almost anything, academics make this mistake too. Once again, we kind of have survival states of mind sometimes, and we're out there trying to prove how much we know, and we're trying to lay out an encyclopedia for the student instead of a handbook, instead of just the bare minimum to get started. That's my mission. It's just to get people started. I want them to figure out most of it on their own. I want them to teach each other. I'm kind of like late. You can call me lazy in that regard. I hold back so much information on purpose. I also want to create curiosity. That's a big thing with teaching. It's a big thing with learning, is that active discovery. I don't want to tell you everything. I want you to figure out some things on your own.
I love that.
So yeah.
I'm holding back too when I'm teaching, but I just don't know. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not going to give you the answer, but I usually don't know it, Patrick. So that's good that you actually know.
You beat
it.
Me to the joke. I was going to say the exact same thing.
I know, Corbin. I can hear Corbin's thoughts. Jeez. Corbin, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I guess like kind of in the same world, when it comes to somebody, and it's kind of a question to both of you, somebody who's new to your craft that you're doing, so jiu-jitsu for you, Patrick, and John for you for like acting, somebody who's completely new, how do you put on those kid gloves but also kind of push them? Because I always find that the hardest way to get somebody into the door of any new hobby that I enjoy doing. It's like, how do I explain to you how cool this is? Because the first time is gonna suck. Like, it's like, you're gonna, and you, to what you're saying, Patrick, if you open the nozzle, it's like it'll just be too much information too quick. I'll start with you, Patrick, but like, how do you find that new person's, what makes them tick? Do you try not to like force it? Like, do you just kind of say like, if it is, it is, if it isn't, they walk away?
Yeah, good question. I think the best way to think about it, to a brand, so you're saying a brand new person who's like, doesn't know up from down?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think of it like world building. My job is, I believe that truth is, and reality are like, and fidelity to reality are like some of the highest values in my personal like belief system. What's an even higher value is helping someone enticing someone to live in that reality.
Okay.
And not run away from it. And so I think of world building when I think of helping a beginner. We start our classes with I start my classes partially because early morning with like yoga. And so that has very little to do with jiu-jitsu. But then we do some like solo movements, like pop triangles, where you like kind of throw your hips up in the air, make a figure four. We do like wrestling shots where you kind of do an air shot, you level change, and you like, as if you're like taking someone down. You do like these shrimp escapes where you're moving. And so these are like solo movements, or we do like these partner drills where you're like doing underhook pummeling, or you're like, and you're basically just doing all these movements against the, either the air solo or against a complicit partner. And you could call that fake because they're not resisting or because you're not facing anyone. But what you're really doing is just building, I'm just building a bridge for people, because what we really need, what is really learning. And I learned this from an academic, like philosopher thinker named John Bernanke, is this idea of relevance realization, where we're just on this pattern, we're just trying to connect dots. So if I can get you to do this like weird thing called a pop triangle, where you're not actually triangling choking anybody, but you like figure out how to make a figure four with your legs, then like once I teach that same something related to a triangle, maybe 20 minutes later in the class, or maybe 2 weeks later, or maybe 2 years later, you're gonna have like a kind of reference point to connect that to. And so I just start with like building a really simple one-dimensional world, and then it just becomes 3D, 4D, 5D, 6D down the road. And so that's my approach to the beginners, is world building, and keep it really, just keep it accessible.
What about you, John? Like, cause I know, I mean, it's very different, obviously. It's a little like acting. Like, cause I remember that journey starting in your class. It was just, it took a long time for me to kind of like accept getting big, you know, or like kind of, I remember distinctly like punching a chair, like one of your chairs, and like that opened me up to like an angry scene of some sort. But yeah, how did you like find, I guess me in particular, but like anybody, like getting them to push a little further in their creative mind, I guess?
Yeah, I think if I kind of self-analyze it, I try to be the teacher I wanted. And I always wanted a teacher to be like, you've got something special, kid. Like you're like, I always wanted that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And maybe, you know, I got that once or twice from coaches or teachers, you know, but I always wanted it from like everybody. And so I like to try to hopefully help my students feel like that, like they're seen and that they're heard. And though that isn't really like the teaching part, that's just like, especially if they're coming and they're trying something new, you know? And so it's an energy that I try to give. And it's funny what you're saying, Patrick. There's an old school way of teaching and acting that was like tear people down and build them back up. And like, I kind of call them the dinosaur way of teaching. And it's really kind of disappeared mostly. But that's like used to be the way they do it, kind of out of fear. And like, you know, the teacher was kind of on this throne. And though I do sit on a throne, I don't tear people down. No, but I think that's an old school way of doing it. And so, you know, so one is I try to be kind of like, you know, the teacher I wanted that sees his students. And then the other thing is I try to kind of let them discover it. Like I can't instill them with the passion. I can't instill them with like the wanting to show up every day and wanting to get better. Like that's going to kind of either be in them or it's not. And I'm going to try to help kind of fuel that. I think the one thing I try to do is sometimes when you look at like the realities of acting, that can feel negative. If you're like, here's your chances of making it, it's like, Jesus, that's depressing. So I try not to like kind of fire hose too much information and kind of let them feel it and kind of, because I think about, once again, when I came out to LA, if people said these, you know, this is how hard it is and this is this, it wouldn't have stopped me. I would have been like, I'm still doing it. I still want to do it. So why kind of focus on the negativity in a sense? So I think for me, being a positive person, being someone that's always curious, I really love when I have students like that, and I will kind of go as far as they want to go. You know what I mean? So if they're like pushing, if they're like, I want more, I want to read more, I want to do more, then I'll try to kind of satisfy that. But I don't try to put that, instill that in them. I don't really think you can, you know? It's never overestimate your power to change other people. Never underestimate the power to change yourself. I think that's a really interesting thing to think about, right? You know?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, and your focus on positivity, and I think the better starting answer to what Corbin asked is point out someone's potential. And you know, there's one approach to that, which is like the Oprah approach, where it's like you get a car, everyone gets a car, everyone gets to school.
Yeah.
Everyone has talent. But it's like as a teacher, your job is to like really see something unique in each student. You gotta like pinpoint that, because you gotta give a specific cue, a specific thing that they can like invest their emotions in to have a path forward. And that's because, yeah, it's not just empty compliments. It's not that at all. Like, and yeah, you, there's like a few people in our lives that we can think of, a few teachers, like it's so pathetic how few teachers like from school there were that actually like said that one thing, or mm-hmm. coaches mm-hmm. said that one thing. But you realize like, man, that carried me. Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe like I received that gift and how much it carried me. It's like, I hope I can do that for way more people, way more often. It had to be meaningful. So yeah, that's, I love that.
So pivoting a little bit, I know you have your own apparel brand, Patrick. How did that get all started? Because it's also like, I don't know anything about the world of like designing that kind of stuff, how you can like kind of get prototypes, all of it I'm very curious about, but it's such a cool brand, it's such a cool like thing that you do. Tell me about it.
Dayslayer, the nickname developed over time. It's not clear to me exactly who said it first in the morning, but we started calling ourselves Dayslayers. And so and so it was only natural to like create a rash guard, yeah, like representing who you are in jiu-jitsu. It's like everyone and their dad creates a rash guard in the jiu-jitsu space. Now most rash guards are like super graphic, blood and gore and swords and less like every color, every way to die, every way to like, yeah, you know, ab suit with like muscles or a bow tie. Yeah. There's just like every kind of rash guard out there. And, you know, I'm like, I would call myself creative, but I wouldn't exactly call myself an artist. Like, I'm not imaginative in the way that other people are. Like, I'm an art, I'm creative in the sense that, like, I like recombinating things. I like improving things, like innovating things. And so, so that's just to say, like, I don't really have, my design sense is just purely minimalism. And so the Dayslayer design is all minimalism. The logo is just, is a, you know, shortening DYSLR, two slashes. And the shorts are pretty cool. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. I like them. And so, yeah, I just set up, you know, as of now, you know, I don't know if you want to get into like the boredom of like logistics and things, but, you know, like, I guess there's some people out there that reinvent the shorts and the shirts and the, you know, tights and different ways of, you know, different styles and contours. That's not really my mission. These are just more symbols and more reminders of people to organize their life, organize their motivations to want to get out of bed in the morning, to want to like answer the call to adventure. And so that's, so, you know, I'm starting this slowly. You know, this brand is still very young, but I do plan on, you know, having a few different ways that this brand will express itself, both through like digital products. I have this new kind of almost an app. I'd almost call it an app, but this thing called Grapple Metrics that I'm developing right now that I'm very excited about. And starting the Dayslayer brand is just, it was just based on, once again, not really myself, it was based on students and client and people around me. And so building a community around it. And last thing I'll say in terms of, because I'm trying to make this help somewhat helpful for people starting brands. Like I said, it's all community based. Like a lot of it is because I created a Discord and brought people together to organize around different topics. Because, you know, most people know Discord. You know, it's not just one long group text, group message. It's, you know, a bunch of different specific channels. And it's a great way to just bring people together and gauge interest in things. Like, and what kind of content do people want? What kind of designs do people like? And so yeah, everything I've done in terms of business is very much like gathering people together and then figuring out what the interests are. Because like I said, I'm not that imaginative. I can't just like come up with something out of nowhere.
So I'm curious, Patrick, it's just like, if someone's like, I got an idea for like a t-shirt, did you have to like, did you Google, like a little bit logistic wise, did you Google something and then find a company that like has it printed in China? And then do you have like 100 boxes in your garage or something like that, that you had to buy? Like, I'm just kind of curious a little bit of just like, did you have to design the logo and send it to them? Like, I guess I'm kind of interested, you know, if like, that's kind of something that's interesting to me as a, you know, entrepreneur. And or did you hire someone that had done gone through this before, or did you kind of do it yourself and kind of just self-taught? Because that's interesting to me, of like how that process works.
Yeah, I originally did hire somebody, to a very talented graphic designer who designed the logo for me, and that I knew just through like kind of just kind of networking, just kind of through the digital marketing space. I've been kind of connected in different digital marketing networks throughout the years, and so, she designed a great logo, and then we originally got it printed, sewed and printed in China through a third party person that had like good contacts, and they kind of liked their quality, it's been fairly important, like when possible, to get things manufactured in the USA. And so we switched to a Texas-based printer and sewer, and it's all been for my business. It's all been third-party logistics. So as of now, I'm not storing that much inventory, and I'm all just hosting on Shopify and just a lot of emails and a lot of SOPs for how to make sure that products get ordered and shipped and delivered. I should say ordered, and it's been a lot of organizing, and my main business is the coaching and the digital products, because apparel is very challenging. I would say like take it seriously, and you better like really want to do it, because it's a lot riskier in terms of capital and also your time, because there's just a lot of ways that things can go wrong. I have a lot of respect for people that like start apparel businesses. I want to continue on the journey, but like I'm doing it in a very playful, experimental way. This isn't like my make or break thing, because it's a beast.
I had a bit for a long time where I would get various articles of clothing and give it to my friends that says I heart Corbin. So I would have like hoodies and beanies, and I would just give it to everybody I could on their birthdays and things. And that was I had kind of what you're asking, John, were like boxes of like shirts. It was just like I heart Corbin, because I had to buy like a minimum of 10 or whatever. I somewhat get the design.
I'm amazed those didn't just sell out.
I know, isn't that weird? Plan. Yeah, yeah.
And why haven't I received one?
I'll bring you one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that was one of my favorite things. But
one of my buddies, I think from high school, I've got to confirm this, but I feel like I heard from someone that the phrase "it is what it is." It is what it is, right? So his thing was, he made like shirts that said "it is what it is, man." So then it wasn't trademarked or something, and so he bought a bunch of the shirts "it is what it is, man." And I just think that's so funny. I gotta confirm if that's true or not, but I don't think he sold a lot of them. But I just love just adding the "man" at the end made it its own thing.
It's genius.
It's kind of awesome. Patrick, I have kind of we're getting near the end here, but I have one final question before we get to our one fun part. What difference do you see in people that like stick with it, and this can be like jujitsu, this can be entrepreneurship, and those that like quit? Like what difference do you see, or that's the question.
I'd say those people that are, I'll speak for myself first. When I've been purely driven by discipline, that's when I tend to quit. And especially in the jiu-jitsu where we live in a culture now that's been really helpful. These guys like Jocko Willink, David Goggins, these influencers who are like, former military guys, and they really help young men, especially in their 20s, like really get organized, you know, wake up early and set goals. But it's very much resting on this bed of discipline. And that's based on like, I should do this, I should do that, kind of for external reasons, because, you know, money, because women, because I should look healthy. And that tends to lead to burnout. It's good for getting started, but it's not good for keeping in the game. So those that stick with things tend to have more of an internal connection with, like, to use a really kind of touchy-feely word, like really deep connection with their inner child. Mm-hmm. And they really know what scratches their itch. And they'll, like, through sleet, rain, you know, volcano, whatever other conditions, like, they're going to do that thing because they have that deep rooted desire. And yeah, having that internal drive, like I said, I'm not hating on discipline. Discipline gets you started, but I don't think it gets you all the way. So I'd say that. I was going to add one other thing, but maybe I'll think of it if either of you guys want to respond to that.
Yeah, I think that's true for me too, especially when it comes to like jiu-jitsu, I guess. Like, it's something that if you try to do it, that's why I don't really, the belt promotions are important milestones, but to me that kind of facilitates what you're describing, where it's like these milestones where you, like, once you get it, oftentimes people take a couple months off because they're like, oh, whatever, I just got purple belt. And then, like, they know, to me, that's not why I'm in it. Like, to me, it's like it's a self journey. Like, I'm enjoying getting better. I'm enjoying kind of improving. It's nice having the milestone. It's such a hard thing. I really enjoyed what you said, where there was it may start you on the journey, but doesn't keep you in the game. And I think you got to find what's like the most interesting part, especially with acting or something that's like a little bit more difficult in the sense of like career journey. But yeah, I think I agree with you completely. It's a hard thing to keep people motivated. You have to know exactly what you want.
Yeah, I think those are great, both great answers. I was just thinking about this idea that I think we're drawn to comfort. It's just like our natural, we all want to be comfortable. And I think that can get us like into trouble in a sense. It's like the goal is not to find comfort, because if you're always doing that, you're not kind of growing, you're not pushing yourself. And I just see that, especially kind of as people, you know, get a little older, what happens is their social circle gets smaller. And if they don't push against that a little bit, like their world gets really small, you know, or if they don't try new things, or if they don't push themselves, or they don't commit to something. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes down to like ease and comfort. And there's a place for that. But what I keep finding is kind of enjoying the suck, I guess could say. And that can be hard. But I think like I really like that. I've always liked a challenge. And so, you know, this idea of like sticking with it or quitting, even though I asked the question, I think it's okay to sometimes quit things. But I also feel like this idea of, you know, figuring out for you where you want to be, kind of have like discomfort, I think that's important that we, you know, work on that, you know?
Yeah, it's possible. I have a slight selection bias. Like, you work mostly with actors who are more creative, more open, kind of more like free flowing, free spirited. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of martial artists that come that are like already kind of like type A, overly disciplined and rigid personality sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they're like really want, and I see a little bit too much of that stiffness. Mm-hmm. And I try to like shake it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I was listening to some like Elon Musk interview, and he was kind of getting grilled by the anchor. It was like an early interview, like 5 years ago, like kind of before he blew up and became like when it was mostly just him working and not talking as much. And the anchor was like at like really grilling him about like, are you really gonna like go to Mars in the next, you know, 3 years? Like, or are you really gonna sell like 5 million Teslas in like the next 15 months? And he was like, hey, oh no. She said, what if you don't meet that number? Like, what are you going to do if you like don't meet that number? He's like, Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just an aspiration. Like, it's just, yeah. If we don't meet it, that's fine. Like, I'm just, it was just like, I need something to aim at. And that's like, that really was helpful for me to hear, because I used to like completely oppress myself with my goals, and goals became such a, like, I started to not set goals, because it was like, oh, there's another thing that's going to disappoint me. And then he's just like, and I realized like goals, like belts are just, it's a tool. It's a motivational tool that helps you like point at something, and you expect to pivot, and you expect to kind of like veer like a snake on the way to that goal, and maybe arrive at a different goal. But like, you got to start with something. You got to start with, like, you know, there's a lot about in jiu-jitsu, especially on belt promotion day, like, it's about the journey, not the destination, which is, to make all the people that don't get promoted feel better, basically. But like, we kind of do need that destination. We need that light at the end of the tunnel to like keep pulling us through when the suck is happening.
Yeah.
And to keep a playful spirit that whole time. That North Star, I guess, is where I'd put a button on that. Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes lately, somewhat related, but it's a Steve Jobs quote, where the people that think they can change the world are the ones that do. And I think that's such an interesting kind of what you're describing. It's like, Elon Musk is like, yeah, I don't know, I'm not going to maybe not hit that goal, but I think I'm going to get close to it. At least I'm getting closer to Mars than you are. You know what I mean? Like, there's like, yeah, a little bit of, there's some interesting philosophy behind that, which, like, I think we get stuck in a rut of like, I need to sell 10 million cars, or I'm not the person that said I was going to be. And that doesn't really matter as long as you're going forward and changing, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. I think the idea of checking in with ourselves and committing to the stuff we want to commit to, that's true. I think that's a really challenging thing to do. I think a lot of people get pulled different or this way or that, or they kind of lose the thread for themselves. And so with what you're talking about, I think it's really interesting when you have someone like Elon, who's got a specific vision. But like, I was watching something, and like in this movie, this guy had a kid, and he was kind of in his 30s, and he was kind of drifting, and the kid is like, you know, dad, is this where you thought you'd be when you were in your 30s, you know? And the look he gave the kid was like, not at all, but I don't know what happened, in a sense. And I think that like, that can happen to us if we don't check in, if we don't have an awareness, if we don't kind of, you know, search out those things that we enjoy, that we're passionate about, and I think, you know, Patrick, what you're saying about discipline, I was also thinking, a lot of this stuff is a choice. Like, I think about that with, like, you know, marriage. I've been married 10 years. Oh, thanks, guys.
Congratulations. No,
but marriage is like, yes, there's love there and things like that, but it's also like a choice to be with this person, in a sense. You know, like, you are like making this commitment, which is not easy. I don't think any marriage that's a, like, an equal marriage is easy. And so you're making a choice to commit to this thing. You know, you're making a choice to commit to acting or to jiu-jitsu. And is it the right choice? It kind of, in a sense, it doesn't matter, I don't think, but making the commitment to that thing, and if that's the thing that, like, it's true to you, then it's the right choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's why it's so hard when it's like, is this the right person for me? I don't really know. Well, it's like, that's kind of on you. We can't really tell you. We can say, you know, I'm a fan of this person or I'm not, but like, you need to know for yourself. And the same as, mm-hmm, like doing jiu-jitsu or doing acting. It's like, you kind of got to check in, and, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? And see if it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I like a quote that I've heard from other people, is just like, make a bad plan, mm-hmm, and then start.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, do a bad job. It's like that. Give yourself that permission, because that is the path to getting better. And like, and I know we're about to wrap up, but one thing that's been crucial for me lately, but that's also something I've been doing the whole time, that's really helped me in my entrepreneurial career is, you know, in business and even more so in art, you're never, almost never going to get a one-to-one return on hard work put in and then positive feedback, not just result, but just like any kind of positive feedback. It's almost like, it's not one-to-one. It's usually not even like 1 to 5. It's like 1 to 100, 1 to 1,000 that you get that feedback. And that's why most people quit. Which this might be more specific to the question you asked. Like, it's no matter how disciplined you are, it's like that asymmetry of work put in and then input and output, basically, it's so discouraging. It's so devastating. And the best antidote to that I've discovered so far is journaling. You mentioned you got to like check in with your goals. You got to like check in with what you're doing. I have a very like specific formula for journaling that I've developed just by trying to work on myself. And I've applied it to jiu-jitsu, but I also apply it to like things like dating, or I apply it to things like where it's like after you do the thing that was hard, you either sweat a bunch and put in all the hard work, or you go take a risk and you like, you're a comedian, you go bomb on stage. If you just go and bomb and you just like kind of write off like, oh, like there's another one on the chin, like I'm getting tougher, I'm gonna like, you know, I'll just do it again. You got to make sure in between those reps, you go back and you write some specific things down. Like you got to make sure you like went in with a strong intention. You got to make sure you keep some stats, some numbers on like what you did, like how many for jiu-jitsu. I apply it to like, when you learn new technique, how many entries did you go for? Like grip, how many times did you like grip your opponent, do the first step or move them a certain way? How many transitions did you get? Put a number on it. How many finishes did you get? How many times did you like get to the extension on the arm bar or the escape from bottom mount? And like put a number on it, because we need, just like a tool, we need, our brains do compute to some, we're not computers, but we do need numbers. We do need to tie things, make things concrete. And we got to track our rep. We got to track like our attempts. If we're not getting, like, hopefully you're tracking some like positive, like actually hitting some targets, but at least track your reps. And that makes you feel like you're getting closer to the end of the tunnel. You're just like, oh, this is starting to stack up. And then after the stats, like you got to like celebrate some micro wins and just find anything. And then like, look at the ways you screwed up, that horrible joke you told, or that like, you know, just some way you flubbed something. Like, do you rest to laugh at it and not cringe at it? And then like, I don't know, break it down. Like what did I do? What went wrong? Like, you know, analyze postmortem. So, I'm going down the rabbit hole of my journaling method, and then like updating your intention for the next time you go out. That's the biggest thing about learning from your mistakes, is like make an updated intention before you stop. Mm-hmm. So you know you have a plan for the future. And that's so crucial for continuing to plug away at something you love, but it's not giving you love back.
Yeah. I know, John, you always talk about like the iceberg thing, you know, like where it's like people only see the top of the iceberg, not just all the work you put underneath. And I think it's very similar. It's, you know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort, but you get there eventually.
Yeah, there's totally. And with what you're saying, I think we like to see a bit of progress. And I think that's where like the belts can come in. That's mm-hmm. where writing stuff down, like as humans, I think we want progress. But I also feel like when things are delayed, like I say, I get like almost everything I want, but I get it 10 years after I really wanted it. So it's like, oh, that's delayed, folks. You know what yeah. I mean? It's like, I get it, but it's 10 years later, and people don't always have that patience. And so I think when it's like not instantaneous, yeah, it can be challenging. And so I love that idea, Patrick, of the journaling and writing that down. Well, this has been great. We have one final thing, Patrick, for you. Just a little a warning for people. There is a swear in this, or maybe two. There's one. So, Patrick, one of the things we like to do is something that's called your best bad acting. And now, we know you're not an actor, so we gave you a quote. Corbin's going to put it in the chat that you might recognize, because it's a quote from your own Instagram page. So this is Patrick will be doing a line from himself. So this should make it easier. It should be less, a little smaller hill to go up. But if it doesn't go well, you can journal about it, Patrick. If it does go well, then kudos. No, I'm just kind of joking. But so the point is for this, just to have fun with the line. You can do whatever you want. You can do it with an accent if you want. You can go over the top. It's not to be good. It's just to have fun. And then we might give you a little redirect And I think you know that, but that just means like we might give you a suggestion to try something else, so we might do it again. But it's nice and simple. It's just for fun. So you can take a look at the line, and then whenever you're ready, you can deliver it.
Okay. I think what I – can I give a little preamble?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what I wrote would go best with – said by Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
But I haven't practiced Rocky Balboa, so we'll see. Okay. You guys can give me some tips after. All right. Look here, kid. You gotta fuck chasing what you think will make you happy. Go after what you'd be willing to die for.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was great.
That was actually really good. That was awesome.
When I was first reading it, I was thinking like Gladiator. And so I kind of want to see hear it that way. But I really like the Rocky Balboa. I think that's probably what we'll go with. But let's hear Gladiator.
That's Russell Crowe Gladiator?
Yeah. Like just cheering towards the crowd. Like, are you not entertained sort of idea.
Oh. All right. Fuck chasing what you think will make you happy. Go after what you'd be willing to die for. No, that was Al Pacino.
That was Al Pacino.
Fuck chasing what you think will make you happy.
Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah! Go after what you'd be willing to die for.
Yeah. Yeah, the Al Pacino was good Al Pacino, though. That was amazing.
Those are great. Those are great. And I do like that quote. So I like that a lot. Those are great. Those are great, Patrick. Patrick, this has been wonderful, man. Been great to get to know you. I could tell Corbin's in good hands, and you know, this has just been awesome. And you know, some of the things you said, really insightful and thoughtful, and you know, really appreciate you kind of spending the time and thinking about it and sharing with us your knowledge and your experience. It's really been wonderful. So
yeah, I appreciate that. And thank you guys for having for just being open enough to have someone like outside your industry. And I know you do this probably with other people too, but it's still cool that that we can kind of mix and cross-pollinate ideas. So really enjoyed it.
For sure. Well, Patrick, it's been lovely having you, man. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. A lot of great nuggets and really interesting stuff. So thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Thank you, too.
Bye, bud. Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Life Podcast.